Hey everybody, welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, Imbibe's editor-in-chief. And earlier this year, for the May-June issue of Imbibe, and on our website and here on the podcast, we spent a lot of time talking about that most classic of classic cocktails, the martini. As part of that coverage and those conversations, we briefly touched upon an extremely close relative of the martini, the Gibson. For those unfamiliar with the Gibson, here's what it is. It's basically a martini, but without any bitters and with a pickled onion as garnish, in place of the martini's familiar olive or lemon twist. Which doesn't sound like a big deal on the surface of things, but if you start talking to dedicated martini drinkers, then you'll eventually see a pattern emerging that really does differentiate the Gibson from the standard martini. I started thinking about this a little more and wondered if I was missing some of the backstory somewhere, so I turned to that indispensable reference work that we have nowadays, the Oxford Companion to Spirits and Cocktails, edited by David Wondrich and Noah Rothbaum. And if you turn to the Gibson listing in that work, you'll see that the backstory is really pretty straightforward. It's a martini without bitters that eventually took on the pickled onion as a garnish and its distinguishing factor. It was introduced in 1898 at the Bohemian Club in San Francisco and named either for illustrator Charles Dana Gibson, creator of the Gibson Girl drawings, or socialite Walter D.K. Gibson, and these were both members of the Bohemian Club. So really, if we're talking about a familiar classic cocktail that's taking on a new identity based almost entirely on its use of garnish, and that this minor variation has developed a deeply loyal fan base, then there's clearly something here worthy of further exploration. And that's what we're going to do with this episode. And joining me for this Gibson adventure is my good friend Souther Teague. Souther, of course, is a partner at Amore Amargo in New York City and the host of the Speakeasy podcast and author of I'm Just Here for the Drinks, and he's also a dedicated Gibson devotee. So come on along on our little Gibson voyage as we talk about gin, pickled onions, and everything in between. Souther, welcome to Radio Imbibe.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you back on the podcast for a number of reasons. First off, it's always wonderful to talk to you about anything over the years. But also, we wanted to explore a cocktail that I know is very near and dear to your heart, and it's also a favorite of mine, and that is the Gibson.
Yes.
And, you know, earlier this year, we covered the martini, both in the magazine and online and as part of our podcast, and kind of looked at the martini from a number of different angles. We didn't really talk about the Gibson all that much during that conversation.
I think that's a failure, Paul.
I know. Well, here we are. This is kind of making up for that because I flagged it for myself at the time. We need to talk about the Gibson. And so I wanted to explore that a little bit with you at this point. And before we do that, could you just say why the Gibson? For you personally, why is the Gibson? Why does it have this kind of appeal to you?
You know, I'm not exactly 100% sure. And also, it took me a long time to come to the realization that the Gibson is among my favorite cocktails, which is shocking because years ago, my partner, Natalie, who does all the artwork for Amore Amargo and the cover of my book, et cetera, she designed a logo for me. Creative Drunk is my handle, you know, so it had the big C and the big D. And in between the two was a coupe glass that clearly had an onion on a pick. And I was like, why'd you choose the Gibson? And she goes, well, that's what I see you drinking the most. And I thought, how does an observer recognize that my favorite drink is more than I recognize it? But what draws me to it, I think, is bracing crispness, malleability of like proof based on how wet or dry you make it. And then this savory tart finishing note, which for me is very much like a palate cleanser. You know, an olive in a martini is also delightful and it's quite savory, but it's not really cleansing. You know, now you've got sort of like, you know, if you eat an olive, you're eating some olive oil. Now you've got an oily coating in your mouth. I really enjoy the crisp brininess of that onion to finish the experience of having this cocktail.
Right, right. And at a certain point, you know, the obvious question when you first start talking about a Gibson is, so is this really just a martini with an onion? Before we did this call, I, you know, dug out my copy of the Oxford Companion just to refresh my memory on the Gibson. And yes, it's pretty much just a martini with an onion. No bitters. That was the distinguishing factor early on. No orange bitters in there. Toss an onion in there and then you're ready to roll. What is it about this drink that makes it deserving of a new name, however? You know, like if you think about a daiquiri, you throw some maraschino liqueur and some grapefruit juice in there, you still call it a daiquiri, right? You just throw a number on it or something, or like you still use the daiquiri moniker. What is it about this simple swapping out of the garnish that makes the Gibson so deserving of its own kind of identity?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know if deserving is the right word, but I think that, you know, first we can identify that the Gibson is the only one that I can think of, the only cocktail that I can think of that really gets a name change based simply on the garnish. Mm-hmm. We don't call it a twist instead of a martini with a twist. We don't call it an olive instead of a martini with an olive. We don't even call this one the Onion. We call it the Gibson. And there's a couple of historical potentials of where that name came from. I think the one that's most popular is there was an artist who painted what were called the Gibson Girls. And I guess the Gibson Girls drank martinis with onions. And so that's the more sort of famous one. You know, so I don't know about whether it deserves its own space, but it has one. And it does make a change. I think the lack of bitters in a Gibson changes the profile of the drink, no matter the wetness that you make the thing. You know, Robert Simonson, I think, famously said, martinis are made of vermouth, gin, and lots of opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I think it does deserve its own thing because this is what language is all about. It's how to say what you want, get your message across, you know, without having to muddy the waters with too many words.
Right, right. And then, you know, one of the things I was thinking about with the Gibson as well. So if I walk into my corner bar and ask for a martini, the first question that's going to come out of the bartender's mouth is gin or vodka. But if you ask for a Gibson, do you still pose that question, gin or vodka? Or is the Gibson still solely the province of a gin cocktail?
You know, I think that's a great question, Paul. I don't think I've ever had anyone request a Gibson from me as a bartender for over 25 years with vodka. I think the Gibson is relegated to gin. Yeah, I'm gonna go all in. The Gibson is gin.
So maybe, I mean, as an extension of that, maybe the Gibson has become kind of that safe space for gin drinkers. You know, it's like, I don't want to even want to think about the vodka question. Don't ask me about the vodka question. So I'm not going to order a martini. I'll ask for a Gibson and then he knows what I want.
Yeah. And, you know, going the other way in the river, I think I've never asked for a Gibson and had the bartender reply back vodka or gin. When you say Gibson, they know what you're mm-hmm. talking about.
Yeah. I wonder if that's part of, you know, we talked about, does the Gibson deserve its own name? And maybe deserve is a strong word, but as a Gibson drinker, the bartender recognizes what you want and what you're looking for.
Yeah, game recognized game in this.
Yeah, situation. Exactly. Exactly. Right. Like, there's a certain subset of martini drinkers who are Gibson drinkers. And if you ask for a Gibson, then there's that pattern of recognition.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't want to like out myself here, but I think that subset of people is like, people who either are, which I currently am, I guess, or have always, which I also did, drink like an old man.
You know? Regardless of age, regardless of gender, they're old man drinks, and the Gibson is one of those.
Yeah, like this is the kind of drink that you get when you go to a bar where, you know, it's just older people and they're sitting one stool apart, no one's together, and they're just drinking.
And they're like, you know what sounds really good after a glass of cold dry gin? An onion.
That's
yeah.
right.
I have found in my own personal research, and you talked about this earlier, and I want to circle back to it. In my own personal research and mm-hmm. testing in my own kitchen and when I have Gibsons out in the wild, that really the Gibson, I like it from the drier approach, a greater proportion Same. Of gin to vermouth. Whereas, you know, with martinis, I can go all over the map. I'll do equal parts. I'll do, you know, 2-to-1s, what have you. But I tend to like that 4-to-1, 5-to-1 ratio more with a Gibson. Is that your own experience? Is that borne out by your own experience? And why might that be?
Yeah, 100%. I think I prefer my, you know, if I'm just drinking martinis as a session, I'm going to do, honestly, a 50-50. I mm-hmm. like it really wet. That way I know I can, you know, keep my wits about me and have a few cocktails with friends or what have you. If I'm sitting down for a Gibson, which I do every Sunday, I call it Gibbs Sunday, with a group of friends, we all get together every Sunday and have Gibsons. I'm going 5-to-1 because, frankly, I'm probably only going to have 2.
Mm-hmm.
So really dry, no bitters at all. What I like to do is put, you know, a scant bar spoon of the brine from whatever the onions are into the mixing glass. You got to give it an extra long stir because we want to get it as cold as possible because it's not going to get any colder in the glass as with any martini. And then garnish with that pickled onion. So, yeah, I like it to be more bracing. And why? I think, you know, vermouth is wine. And I don't think I can, in my right mind, pair, you know, wine with pickled onions. But gin, bracing, botanical, lots of flavors going on in there. In fact, sometimes some of the similar ingredients that go into pickling are in the gin itself. So the gin seems to be more attuned to the garnish, right?
Right, right.
So I want it to be a little more gin heavy than vermouth/wine heavy.
Right, right. And you touched on a couple of things there I want to circle back to. First off, Gibbs Sundays. That's brilliant. When did you start doing this and how did the Gibson become the focal point?
Well, we were gathering at a bar every Sunday pre-pandemic. And, you know, I would, you might recall even on my social media, I would hashtag church, right? Because it was Sunday. It was my day off. It was a bar. I like to go there. We went. When the pandemic came, we couldn't go for a while. the same group of people. We've been going for, you know, 8 or 9 years together now. And then we still gather on Sundays. But after the pandemic, we realized it wasn't necessarily church. And we didn't really realize prior that we were always drinking Gibsons. Probably at my, you know, I was leading the charge. Mm-hmm. We'd go, we'd have a beer, maybe a cocktail, and then sort of finish out with a Gibson or two. So we decided it's not really church, it's Gib Sunday. So that's been a hashtag since the pandemic.
You're talking about the wine and the vermouth aspect. And I have to ask this, because as you venture out in the world today and you order your martinis and your martini variations, increasingly, a lot of times you might see some Blanc vermouth coming into the equation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to argue with that because I like Blanc vermouth and I like to see it in martini interpretations. Does Blanc vermouth or does that kind of residual sugar of any kind belong in a Gibson, or is Gibson strictly kind of a dry environment?
Well, I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. I hate that phrase, but it works. If that's what you like, then that's what you like. So go for it. I prefer it dry, right? So I'm going to use a French dry vermouth like Noli Prat or Dolan. The Blanc vermouth does bring some sugar, and that's okay too, because, you know, pickling isn't just vinegar. It involves salt and sugar, right? So if your onion has a balanced pickle in there, there's some sugar in there too. So that rounder, sweeter aspect of Blanc vermouth can tie into the onion. And in fact, even though I kind of just poo-pooed the notion of onions and wine, there's a brand of onions out there called Tipsy, and they are onions that are pickled with some vermouth. So that kind of lends them towards the Gibson. And then going further, my favorite garnish for a Gibson is what are called rakkyo, R-A-K-K-Y-O. And rakkyo are the Japanese pickled scallion heads. So picture your scallion, but they're a little bit larger, just the head, the white part. And they pickle those, and they do have both an umami quality. I'm sure there's some, you know, MSG in the pickling, as well as a sweet quality. So you get this crunch, this briny tartness, some definite umami. You're eating an onion, and then of course there's a little sweetness on the finish as well. So, you know, that's the whole game we're in, right? That's mixology in a different way. That's just balance.
Right, exactly. And I want to come back to that onion question in just a moment. But before we do, mm-hmm. I just want to throw out there, we're talking about, you know, the dryness quality of the wine. I think Fino Sherry or Manzanilla Sherry is fine in this kind of application. It has that kind of dryness to it that fits
for sure.
with what you're looking for, as well as like a Manzanilla. It has that subtle touch of salinity that kind of mm-hmm. rounds it out as well. So I don't want to ignore the Sherry, the people who love to have Sherry in their martinis with their Gibsons. I think that plays a role.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think it comes into play for me very often, but I'm, again, not against it at all. And, you know, we traipse around on Gibbs Sundays. We used to have a home base, but now we move from bar to bar. And, you know, the different bartenders have their different interpretations. They can all be quite satisfying. And again, there's no, like I said before, you know, quoting Robert Simpson, vermouth, gin, and opinions. There's lots of opinions on how to make a martini.
Yeah. back to that onion point, and you mentioned one of your favorites with these pickled scallions. The onion really kind of comes in a factor where if you're thinking this is the distinguishing characteristic, then the onion needs to matter in some way. I mean, yes, you Ooh. Can go to your local grocery store and pick up, you know, the pickled onions off the shelf, which I have done and always been disappointed whenever I've done that.
Sorely.
Really, you need to kind of pay attention. If this is going to be that significant a part of the equation, then how much attention and what other options do we have for that onion part?
Yeah, I mean, I've got some brands that I love. Tipsy, I just mentioned, they're finished with a little bit of vermouth. They're quite good. Filthy makes a great onion because they're, again, nice and crisp. I think the ones you buy at the grocery store generally are going to be a little smaller than you want and also quite sort of mushy, right? They're not really mm-hmm. crisp anymore.
Yeah.
They may have the briny quality, but they're not very crisp. And again, the rakkyo is kind of on the leaderboard for me as far as things you can buy. I do love to go to a bar that's making their own onions, because that shows me that they care about this drink enough to go that extra step and create something of their own. You know, Megan Dorman is pretty well known here in New York for having delicious Gibson onions at all of her spots, because she's a big fan of the cocktail as well. And that's another thing, right? To that end, Paul, when I walk into a bar that I may have never been to, and if I'm feeling like I want a Gibson, now, first of all, take a step back. You have to, as the consumer, and me as the consumer in this scenario, you have to examine your environment before you order anything, right? You know, you can't just walk into any bar and expect to get any drink you want, right? So first I look around and I see, is this a place that's making cocktails? You know, do I see jiggers? Do I see them using them? Do I see the vermouth on the back bar with a speed pour in it and a layer of dust on it? You know, these are factors that are going to either push me towards or not towards. But when it comes to this specific cocktail, if I walk into a bar that I've not been to and I want one, I'll lean over and I'll just say to the bartender, do you honestly have a good onion for a Gibson? And if they say yes, I'm in. And sometimes I'm disappointed because maybe what they think's a good onion and what I think's a good onion don't match. But by and large, if they say no, then I move on and I order something else.
Right, right. And I think one of those things about the onion is, like you said, it is so easy to do it yourself if it comes down to it. I know that we have run a recipe, I believe it's on our website at imbibemagazine.com, for pickled onions from Pretty Decent, a bar in Louisville, Kentucky. They use them for their El Gibson. That's Spanish for the Gibson. And he makes it using mezcal and blanc vermouth and a little bit of the brine from this pickled onion. So it's super easy. I've done it myself at home. And you can find all kinds of recipes. And you can also kind of improvise yourself based on the different kinds of seasonings you put on the brine for whatever your personal favorite might be. On that note, you know, on making your own onions, we should emphasize that size matters. You said, you know, some of the ones you get from the supermarket are too tiny, mm-hmm. but there is also the other end of the spectrum.
You can go the other way.
I remember several
yeah.
years ago, I was at a bar in San Diego and I ordered a Gibson. It was on their menu and they said, we do our own house pickled onions. I thought, fantastic. And the bartender came over and said, you're getting the very last onion in the batch. And he put it on one of those bamboo cocktail picks and kind of straddled across the top of the glass, and that bamboo pick was swaying with the responsibility and burden of this giant cocktail onion.
Sure looks like an
I mean, it was displacing liquid in the glass. Yeah. It was such a large onion.
Yeah, that's a problem too. And I think that, you know, generally, again, if someone is running a bar that is going to take the time to pickle their own onions, they are paying attention to that drink itself. So, you know, they're trying their own wares, they're going to make themselves a Gibson and try that onion. And yeah, sometimes we'll get one that's a little too big. And what that does is the outer layers are a little soft. The inner layers are still kind of raw. You can't comfortably, you know, take it in one bite. And it's kind of, you know, because onions are layered, it's difficult to take bites out of an onion. Yeah, that's I've definitely run into that a few times. And it also seems oddly that they're always the, not the white pearl onions, but the red pearl onions that typically, I guess they just come a little larger on, you know, everything's sold by a market size that works for the seller. So I think maybe they just come a little bit larger. So that's certainly something to watch out for as well.
Right. It's almost like, you know, I almost have to think about it like an oyster. You know, if it's more than one bite, then it's too big.
You've been out with me eating oysters. You know, I disagree. I love oysters. The bigger, the better for me.
Before we move off the onion, we need to talk about that brine component, because you mentioned that as part of the equation. Yeah. I mean, not only is it, you know, in the, you know, whatever residual brine with the onion, but the brine can also be a tool if you want something like, I hate to say dirty, but a little dirty, where you put some of the brine into the drink as
well.
Listen,
we're not far off the dirty map here, right? With the re-explosion in popularity of the martini in general, and especially the savory / dirty martini, you know, this seems like it would be quite in line with the trends that are going on, and maybe that's why you're hosting this episode. So yeah, for me, again, it's 5-1, so that's 2.5 ounces of gin to a half an ounce of dry vermouth. And also, I want to make sure that's a pretty bracing gin, you know. I've been reaching for Heyman's lately. It's 47% ABV. And then just a scant bar spoon of the brine going right into the mixing glass. That's going to bring that little added nuance of dimension where the bitters are missing. Because, which also, I'm here to admit that I'm aware that people don't put bitters in their martini, which is a mistake. But they already are missing the thing that they don't even know they're missing. So, like, I get that I'm trying to re-engineer something for people, but there's a nuance that's missing from the Gibson where the bitters were, and there's not enough cling to the onion itself of that brine so that when the onion goes into your glass at the finish, that's going to make up for it. So just a, not quite a full bar spoon, but, you know, maybe 3/4 of a bar spoon of brine right into the mixing glass when I'm spinning.
Right. And you touched on one thing that I wanted to come back to, and that is the gin itself. Are we strictly talking classic London dry style or something classic like Plymouth? Or is this a place where there's room to roam with, you know, new Western gins, modern gins, and things of that nature?
As a gin lover, I think that there's no real wrong answer on the style of gin. I don't think I would reach for gins that are too floral. I don't think I would reach for gins that are too fruity, that have botanicals in there that aren't, you know, pretty much straight citrus. Like, I wouldn't reach for Hendrix. Hendrix is too floral with the rose. I don't think rose and pickled onions are going to match in my mind. But that's me. Again, the listener can do as they please. But I would certainly reach for London Dry first. Second to that, certainly Plymouth is on the list for me. I don't think I would reach for an Old Tom. Again, that sweetness might be overbearing. But again, there is some sweetness in the brine and in the wine. So as long as you can find balance, again, I'm thinking about my ratio 5-to-1, where those things might fit in. But I think for me, first reach is going to be London Dry.
Right, right. And that kind of savory quality in a gin is really what we're looking for. That the thing that the juniper and that the Angelica and that the coriander may bring to the equation, that really kind of fits in with that overall profile.
Yeah, and the citrus notes that are in the gin inherently, that way we can eschew the notion of a twist in this regard. So,
right, fantastic. We are heading toward final call here. Any final thoughts on the Gibson or Gibson-related philosophy you'd like to share with us?
I mean, I think I would just like to see it get a little bit more of the light that it deserves, especially as we are in this kind of almost arms race to make the most savory martinis. You know, you've got people out there like Spirited LA on Instagram who's making martinis using ranch dressing or whatever, which are, you know, certainly probably clickbaity or whatever, but she does taste them and then she speaks about them and talks about how they react. But again, I think the simplicity yet still power-packed flavor of a Gibson is something that's been overlooked. And I think that it deserves the attention that hopefully it's getting right now by being on this show.
Fantastic. Souther, thanks so much for being back on the podcast and for talking about the Gibson with us. And I look forward to hoisting one with you very soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Do you mind if I plug myself a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
Yeah. I'd love to have anyone follow me, follow along with my antics. I'm Creative Drunk on all platforms and I do all my own social media and I answer all my DMs and stuff like that. But also coming up soon, later this month, I will be launching a Kickstarter for my new podcast called Sauced. And on Sauced, as a former chef, we'll be breaking down recipes of food, just like we broke down this cocktail, that involve booze. And then we'll talk about what cocktail we would drink with this food that's made with booze. It's going to be called Sauced, and it's going to launch in January. The Kickstarter will launch actually next week.
Fantastic. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And this is amazing. I look forward to that.
Yeah, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cheers. Well, thanks for being on the podcast.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Call me anytime.
You can find Souther Teague on Instagram at Creative Drunk. And Souther mentioned his new podcast, Sauced, that'll debut in January. They're raising funds now on Kickstarter, and we've got a link with that info in this episode's notes. And that's it for this episode. Subscribe to Radio Imbibe on your favorite podcast app to keep up with all our future episodes. We've got tons of recipes and articles for you online on our website, imbibemagazine.com. Keep up with us day-to-day on Instagram, Pinterest, Threads, and Facebook. And if you're not already a subscriber to the print and or digital issues of Imbibe, then here's the perfect opportunity to change that. Just follow the link in this episode's notes, and we'll be happy to help you out. I'm Paul Clark. This is Radio Imbibe. Catch you next time.